It's Wednesday, the 20th of April, 2016. Happy birthday to Danny Granger. The Red Rock Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Loot Crate and MZ Gons. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like MZ Gons, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. Thank you to the couple of people who left reviews overnight, and it goes a long way to helping the podcast improve and get better and get out to more people. So thank you to everyone who's done that. If you've got 2 seconds spare, maybe more than 2 seconds, maybe you'll give it 120 seconds. If you've got 120 seconds spare, leaving a review is the best way you can help the podcast. The other way you can help the podcast is by going to lootcrate.com/redrock and visiting today's sponsor. This podcast, along with all other shows, is streamed live on YouTube. So if you are watching live on YouTube and you want to interact with the show, tweet at me at redrock_bball, and we can get to any of your questions, concerns, comments during the program. So if you are there, if you are watching, it's a little bit earlier tonight than some of the other nights, so maybe there's a few more people watching. If you are watching along live, tweet at me at redrock_bball. Michael Bolton?
Let's get to it.
I'll do that. The monstrous line of the night for the playoffs, we're going to go with if you listened to yesterday's show, I predicted a very, very poor night from a daily fantasy perspective. I thought that your optimal score or the perfect lineup would yield about 250 points. It was actually less than that. So we had a really horrific night from a fantasy point of view. The best overall performance, though, was Al Horford of the Atlanta Hawks. Horford had a night-high 36 FanDuel points. Not very much. 17-5-2, but he had 3 threes, 1 steal, 5 blocks, an all-round fantastic performance from Horford. And we know how much of an underrated player that he is. He's going to get a big contract. I am a little bit worried about him in the offseason. I was discussing with Heath on Twitter maybe last night, talking about Al Horford coming to the Bulls. We're both Bulls fans. And yeah, I love Horford. I think he'd be great. But you sign him to a $20 million five-year contract, and by that fourth year, it's going to start to look a little bit ugly, I think, given his age and deterioration that could come that way. It might not, but there's a little bit of a concern with signing him to a big contract in the offseason. But regardless, we're talking about the here and now. And Al Horford put up some big numbers, and he was the monstrous line of the night. The DFS value play of the night was from the same team, the Atlanta Hawks, and that was Kyle Korver. He was a minimum salary player. He returned over 9x value. He dropped 32 on the Celtics. They were really bad, Boston, in this one. Korver went for 17-7. He had 5 triples, 2 assists, a steal, and a block. I did talk about him as being one of the best punt options out there. At minimum salary, he's definitely been a disappointment for most of this season, but at that sort of salary, he was a guy that was pretty tough to pass up. On the other side of things, a guy that I hope you avoided, as I avoided myself, Lance Stephenson. He was at 5,100. He is the DFS dud of the night. He put up a grand total of 5.5 points. He played just 9 minutes and had 4 points and 1 assist. And when it all boils down to it, he's just not good. And I've said this for quite a while. I said this when he was playing his big season in Indiana. I just don't believe that he's a good player, and it is bearing out now. Not only is he a good player, he's possibly a worse human as well, and it's all adding up to Stephenson not having a big career ahead of him. I wouldn't have thought. I'm not a massive fan of Lance. Some people love him, definitely not me. So he was the dud of the night from a DFS point of view. Let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineup. And as I said, it was pretty low scoring. Isaiah Thomas and Jeff Teague would have been your 2 point guards. You had to shell out a lot of cash for them, and they gave you 23.6 points for Thomas and 25.2 for Teague. That's just how poor the night was. At shooting guard, Korver had the 32.4, and Evan Turner in that sort of expanded role to a degree with Bradley out, he went for 22.5. The small forwards, Kent Bazemore at 25.8, he was a guy I was really interested in, and Jay Crowder was pretty solid at that mid-range price of 23.9. The power forwards, wasn't expecting Jermichael Green and Zach Randolph to both have decent nights. Randolph went for 30.9, Jermichael Green went for 23.9. That was one that I wouldn't have been really all that interested in. At center, Al Horford at 36 was one of the plays of the day, and it turned out that way. And that lineup gave you 244.2 points. That is a horrific, horrifically low amount of DFS points for a night. The next few days, we've got three games on, so we're going to have better options for DFS to play, more options, more players out there. And I think tonight's games, or depending on when you're listening to this, let's get straight, Wednesday night's games are going to provide more ability to put up some good DFS lines and be able to construct some good DFS lineups. That's the way that I'm seeing it at the moment. Anyway, all right, before we get into some other topics, we're going to look at the games from Tuesday. We're going to preview Wednesday's games. We're going to have a quick discussion on a couple of other things as well. It's time for a word from today's sponsor, which is Loot Crate. It's a monthly subscription box service. You get epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and each month you get between 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. This month's theme has cut off. We're still waiting to hear what the May theme will be, but you can still subscribe because you know that you're going to love, if you love geek and gamer items, you're going to love what Loot Crate provides. So if you're interested in checking out what's over at Loot Crate, go to lootcrate.com/redrock. That is our unique URL, which tells the people at Loot Crate that you came from this podcast, and that helps me when I go to other sponsors and say, hey, look at all these people who have gone across here and help to keep things, you know, help to keep the money that supports this podcast rolling in. So lootcrate.com/redrock. And as I mentioned, even if you aren't interested in the product, just go to that website and check it out. And I think you will be interested heading over there, because I know that, you know, the crossover between fantasy basketball, which is a lot, which is nerdy to a degree, numbers, maths, all that sort of stuff, and people who like gaming, and that's nerdy is cool. Go and check it out. If you decide to subscribe to one of the boxes, it could be for yourself, it could be for a gift for someone, a son, a daughter, a nephew, a niece, a cousin, a brother. Use the coupon code, which is REDROCK. It's one word, and you save $3 off any new subscription over on Loot Crate. So make sure you're checking out that URL, our unique URL, and going across. And if you're interested in buying it, saving yourself $3 off any new subscription. So go and check out lootcrate.com/REDROCK. Easy. All right, now before we get into these games, a couple of things I want to touch on. Tweeted a fair bit about it last night, my time, very early in the US. Jamal Crawford winning the Sixth Man of the Year. Absolutely hate it. It is, and I'll start off. I like Jamal Crawford. He's, from all accounts, never met him. For all accounts, he is an absolute ripper bloke. Just an absolute top guy. One of the best guys around. Really friendly with the media. Super nice guy. Superb teammate. Really top class, A-plus bloke. No faults. Basketball-wise, he wasn't good. He was not the best guy to play off the bench this year. He was not the second best guy to play off the bench. He was barely, he wasn't the top five guy to play off the bench this year. It just reeks of laziness from the voters. And it shows very little understanding of the game to me. I haven't gone in and looked at who voted for who, but he won by such a considerable margin that way too many people had to have voted for Jamal Crawford. Why? Because he scored 14.4 points per game off the bench. Is that impressive that he didn't even score 14.2 points per game. Is that impressive? He shot 40% from the field. He was below league average at 3, and that's where his game is. He's a 3-point shooter. He only made 1.5 threes a game at 34%. He doesn't defend. He's a hopeless defender. He gets no steals. He gets no assists. He gets less than 2 rebounds a game, 1.6 rebounds a game. That's brutally bad. It's really bad. He had a negative on-off numbers for the season, plus-minus numbers, and his on-and-off net rating numbers were negative on a team that was positive. He had a box score plus-minus of negative 2.6. His win shares were 3.3, which is the lowest ever total for a winner of this award. If you look at the win shares stat for all players who are eligible to win the Sixth Man of the Year, Jamal Crawford was 41st. And win shares is not the be-all and end-all of things, I know that, but it's a pretty good indicator. And look, if he had to come in third, if he had to come in sixth, I would have said, you know what, it sort of makes sense. 41st. There is 40 players better in that stat than him, and it's ludicrous that he won it. Now, a lot of people were debating me on Twitter yesterday. Like, my pick was Enes Kanter. And the question will come out, oh, Kanter, no defense, shit defender, useless. Crawford's as bad a defender and not as good offensively. So that argument doesn't sit well with me. I picked Kanter because he led the league in a category, offensive rebounding percentage. If you lead the league in a category coming off the bench and you're such a key part of a team, I give it to you. But I wouldn't have had any problem if Tristan Thompson had got it. I wouldn't have had any issue if Ed Davis had got the award. I wouldn't have had any issue if Will Barton got the award. I wouldn't have had any issue if Ryan Anderson got the award. I probably would have had a little bit, but not as much as Jamal Crawford. Gorgui Dieng was eligible for Sixth Man of the Year. Drew Holiday was eligible for Sixth Man of the Year. Holiday barely got a vote at all. I think he got like 2 third place votes, which is ridiculous. And the responses I got back for that was, oh, why would you pick him? Their team only won 36 games. And my response was, put Crawford on New Orleans. How many more games do they win? I'm guessing they lose a lot more if Crawford is in Holiday's place. And this sort of dovetails to me into a bigger discussion, which I don't want to get too much into, but the narrative of wins in team sport for an individual basis is so ridiculously overblown, in my opinion. And we've narrowed things down to, well, did you win? Did you get a ring? It's all about rings. It's not all about rings. There's so many other things that go into it. And yes, winning is great, but a successful season, that means, you know, by definition of that one team has a good year and 29 others have a shit year. 12 players have good years, everyone else has a terrible year, going by that sort of logic, because they didn't win a ring. You know, you hear people talk about, oh, LeBron, what a joke, he's 2-4 in the finals. Cool. Well, what if he didn't make the playoffs 4 times and went 2-0 in the finals? Is that better? Is that a better career for LeBron because he went 2-0 in the finals and didn't make the playoffs in his other 4 times or went out in the first round? Is that better? It's not. I don't want to say we because it's not me and I know it's not a lot of you, but people really idolize wins as everything. Now, Crawford, if the Clippers win games, is it because of Jamal Crawford? I don't think so. It's Chris Paul, it's DeAndre Jordan, it's Blake Griffin, it's Cole Aldrich more than what Jamal Crawford does. It's the coaching, it's the front office, it's everything about this team. It's Austin Rivers, and that sounds dumb. It's Wes Johnson, it's Luke Marmute, it's lots of players on this team. Crawford was not good. He had a below average PER. Enes Kanter's was 24, which is superb. And again, this is not just a Kanter Crawford thing. Crawford was just objectively bad, and I think he was subjectively bad as well. He can go out there, yes, you know what, he had a couple of big games, and he goes out there and he hits a shot and people are like, oh, Jamal, he dropped him, he broke his ankles, he dropped a crossover, he hit a 3, he got 30 points. Cool. What about the other 80 games when he was terrible or he was useless, or there were literally games when he couldn't get to over 20 minutes a game because he was really struggling? And I know that happened with Kanter a lot, and Holiday played less games, but it's a real issue. It bothered me a lot, that vote, and some of the reactions to it, especially in regard to winning, really bothers me, because it's something that there's so much more that goes into winning. It's not one person. One person can't do everything. And I hate narratives on choking. I hate narratives on softness, and I hate narratives on winning. He's a winner. He got rings. He gets the rings. Cool. Robert Horry is the best player of all time. Is he? No. But he's got rings. He's got 7 of them. So he's the best player. It doesn't work that way. And there's nowhere that says the sixth man has to be the person who scores the most points on a top 4 seed. Why is it that? And that's basically what it was. Someone who throws up shots, scores points on a good team. On an elite team. That's what it seems to come down to, and it really pissed me off. The next thing that came out, the Suns. They've hired Earl Watson for years. Baffling to me. Hey, interview some other candidates. Maybe they did. But the main thing that seemed to come out from everything that I've read is that, you know, Watson's been given the job because the players liked him. Cool. Phoenix, you've got a really bad owner. Ryan McDonough's making some really bizarre decisions. To me, like, just some real weird stuff. And it started with the 3-point guard system, trading Dragic, the Markieff Morris, Marcus Morris situation, Jeff Hornacek's firing, Tyson Chandler's contract, lots of things that are weird. And this is another one that's weird. I don't care that he gets on well with the players. You know, that's good, but it shouldn't be reason 1, it shouldn't be reason 2, it shouldn't be reason 3. Earl Watson was running out Len and Chandler lineups and playing a top five pick, Alex Len, out of position so they could play next to Tyson Chandler. It didn't work. The Suns were still bad, and they were probably worse when Hornacek left. I have to go. I didn't actually check the records. I probably should have checked the records. But visually and watching them play, that they were worse. Yeah, the cattle he had weren't great, and it was thinned out somewhat, but I didn't think that Watson did a great job. Interesting to see what happens. I thought that a new coach might come in and go, you know what, we're just going to run Alex Len at center, work him in there, and build around this guy. But Watson coming back, is he going to run the Len Chandler front court again? If so, it's ugly, and it's not good for this team, and it really seems a bizarre decision to me. Speaking of bizarre decisions, the Sacramento Kings have got three front runners for the coaching job, apparently. Sam Mitchell, Vinny Del Negro, and Mark Jackson. If these are your top three picks, I feel sorry for people in Sacramento. Now, Vinny Del Negro he's underrated as a coach. Yes, everyone was like, oh, Del Negro is the worst. He's terrible. Well, his record is basically the same as what Doc Rivers' was at the Clippers. He's been a guy who gets to the playoffs a lot. And he had a lot of downfalls, and play calling, and that was one of them. But Del Negro is not a bad coach. But still, there are other guys out there. Don't hire a retread. Get a new coach in. Get an assistant in. Hire anyone. Sam Mitchell, seriously. If you're hiring Sam Mitchell, just give it away, Divac. Just hand in your GM contract. Rip it up. Set it on fire. Give it away. Mark Jackson, please. That guy is as big a dickhead as I've ever heard speak. His record in Golden State, and people will give him credit, and look, he deserves some credit for what Golden State did. But the way that he interacted with assistants and the backstabbing and fighting going on in that team, you know that plenty of the players were not fans of what he was doing with that team, with his bizarre practices. Practice on the court, like bizarre things that he would do. He obviously has to have a job in California, which again is a weird thing because his church is there. Cool. Like, you're in the NBA, mate. You're not. Why is the church the big factor of where you take a job? It is bizarre that they are your top three candidates. And this is according to Mark Stein. So he's got his finger on the pulse. And if they're your top three candidates, then you aren't looking in the right spots. I feel really sorry for Sacramento fans. And Sacramento fans should be rooting like crazy to get Vinny Del Negro. That is who you want out of that group. And that is a sad indictment on who Divac has narrowed the search to. Good luck, Sacramento. Okay. That's enough ranting. Let's get into the games. And They were pretty bad. They were terrible. The Hawks get a big victory over the Celtics. Jay Crowder scored 2 points. Yeah, he was still the best performer on the Celtics. 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks. He played 35 minutes. The injury is not a concern for him. There was no Kelly Olynyk in this game. So we thought maybe some of these other front court guys would turn in some decent nights. Amir Johnson played 21 minutes. Zeller played 14. Sullinger played 14. Jordan Mickey got on the court. He played a minute. Jonas Jerebko played 20. So I was sort of right that Jerebko would get an extra bump with Olynyk out, but it's still, they're not rationalizing the front court minutes. It's still, we're just going to run 4 guys out there and play them sort of limited minutes. Evan Turner got 33 minutes, and Terry Rozier probably provided a bit of a spark. He played 24 minutes. He got the extra run with Bradley out, had 10 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 threes, while RJ Hunter played just 15 minutes. So we saw in the game where Bradley got injured, Hunter got more minutes there. But in this game with Bradley out, we saw more of Rozier, and he's been the guy of choice when a guard has gone down all season. I just thought they'd want to get Hunter out there for a bit more 3-point shooting, but it wasn't to be the case. It was Rozier that went out there, and Hunter was poor. He had 1 block in his 15 minutes, so probably Rozier is the best choice. Just not a good night from the Celtics. Isaiah Thomas was putrid. He was 4 of 15, and he was getting destroyed in the paint. The Celtics look like they're... Like, I picked Hawks in 6. It feels like it's going to struggle to get to 6. The Celtics just appear overmatched at the moment. Without Avery Bradley, I feel like they're going to struggle to get a game, to be honest. Look, they might get one back in Boston, but it's not good. On the Hawks side of things, Paul Millsap had a great opportunity but squandered it. 1 of 12 from the field. He still had 4 blocks, he had 7 rebounds, but only 4 points, not his best night. But the Hawks, they were able to go to their bench. They got Lamar Patterson and Kirk Heinrich into the game. That's how over this game was. Jeffy Teague had 13 points and 6 assists. And Dennis Schroeder, he suffered an ankle sprain. He played 20 minutes and went 8-2-1. If he happens to be out, then we're going to have to see more of Heinrich as that backup point guard. Kent Bazemore only had the 5 points. He shot 2 of 14. Both teams in this one shot under 40%. The Celtics at 32, the Hawks at 39. Just a horrific, horrific, horrific night of basketball, from both teams. The Hawks get the victory, though. They pounded down on the Celtics. And another key thing to look at from the Hawks rotation is Mike Scott with another 20 minutes. He's getting... Chris Humphries is not playing at all. Scott is that backup big man that they're using. They even got Mike Muscala in for 11 minutes, but that's not something I'm going to be counting on moving forward. The next game, the Spurs and the Grizzlies. Seriously, this series should be just done. It's 2 games in. It's over. The Spurs won by 26. Tony Allen played 21 minutes. He went 12-3. He's going to be in that mid-20s range most of the season. Jordan Farmer actually got more minutes than Xavier Munford in this one. 31 for Farmer, 27 for Munford. Munford 6-3-2, Farmer 8-1-2. I'd still prefer Munford in most DFS spots just because of the cheaper salary. The Birdman played 24 minutes. Matty Barnes played 30 and went 9-6. He's really struggling at the moment. And as I said the other day, that the Grizzlies, they can't shorten their rotation because everyone's the same. Bad. That's all they can do. And it's just going to be a mess like this for the rest of the season. As for using Spurs guys in DFS, it's a struggle. 27 minutes for both Aldridge and Lendon. That's going to be the way that it runs for most of this series, I would imagine. Timmy Duncan at 26, Danny Green at 20, Tone Parker at 23, Manu played 14. Everyone gets in. Boban Marjanovic played 7 minutes. Andre Miller played 6 minutes. Kevin Martin got 17 minutes. It is just very, very ugly for those high-priced Spurs players. Aldridge was still good, 10-8 and with 4 blocks, and Leonard had 13-3. With 2 steals and a block, but it's not enough to justify the sort of salary you've got to play. It is just extraordinarily ugly watching this series. Let's hope we don't have to do too much more of it. Let's talk DFS for Wednesday, and it should be a better night. Let's look at the Charlotte and Miami game. My overall thoughts on the slate as a whole is that I think that you're going to get your value plays at shooting guard. So you're going to spend up in other spots, but shooting guard's where you're going to be able to potentially put 2 sub 4,500 players in and run with that. I think that's probably the way that a lineup is going to work. Let's get back to Charlotte, Miami. The Heat are favored by 5. The total is 199. Let's look at the point guards. Goran Dragic is at 6,900. That's a pretty nice salary for Dragic. Don't mind using him at that price. He's averaged 34 the last 3 times he's played Charlotte. Only had 26 in game 1, but that was a blowout. Maybe he can put up a little bit more if the game stays close. I do like him there. Kemba Walker at 8,000. His salary's dropped by 300, so that's encouraging in that sense, but 8,000 just feels too expensive when I can go 1,100 less and take Dragic. Not keen on Walker. None of the backups are going to really have any impact here because the backups who are going to handle the ball are all listed as shooting guards. And that takes us to Joshy Richardson, who's at 4,300. He's been playing backup point guard for stretches this year. He had 20 points in game 1. He's at 4,300. I think he is a pretty decent option to look at as a cheap player at shooting guard. Dwayne Wade at 7,400. Yeah, look, it's maybe a little bit expensive, but I think you can feel pretty confident of getting over 30 points with Wade, and that makes him a guy to look at. Jeremy Lin at 4,300. Only put up 14 in game 1. I think he'll be better than that, but he's not someone I'm really relying upon. I might even prefer Courtney Lee at 39, and you know, you could pair him with a Josh Richardson or one of the other cheaper shooting guards in one of the other games and feel a bit more confident about using that sort of pairing. But this is sort of where the value is going to come in these cheaper shooting guards who are out there. Where are we? Small forwards. Joe Johnson's at 4,900. He had 22 points in game 1, and that was only in 26 minutes. I think at 4,900, Johnson is one of the better plays out there. He'll be a guy that's not going to take up much salary, obviously, and should be able to return you 25-plus points. I do like him. Justice Winslow at minimum salary. He got 27 minutes in game 1. I think he's going to float between that 27 to 30-minute mark, and that means you're going to get with your potential to approach 20 fantasy points. He's not a great play, but if you've gone with, say, LeBron as the other small forward and you want a minimum guy, Winslow is going to be interesting. Nick Batum is down to 6,900, so that salary is pretty good. Now, the Heat have had a really good record recently against opposition small forwards, and that has limited, or did limit, Batum in game one. He still had 29 points, so he's not someone to completely shy away from. 29 points in a really poor performance. He played 40 minutes. I think that Batum could be a guy that you'd look at in a tournament and throw him in, and he's got 40, 42, 45 point upside. Don't think we're going to see Darrell Wright, despite his little cameo in game one. At power forward, Marvin Williams was dreadful. In game one, only 9 points. He's at 5,300. The matchup is not good. The power forwards have really, really struggled against the Heat lately. And Williams himself has struggled. He's averaging less than 20 points over his last five. But that salary at 5,300 with a $300 drop makes him appealing. He makes him to be someone that I do like to look at in tournaments. Frank Kaminsky at minimum salary. Only had 6 points in game one. He'll be better than that, but not a lot of confidence there. Luol Deng at 6,600. Well, he's risen by $300. It's because he put 42 up in game one. I don't think he's going to be that red hot. That was almost a career night or career playoff night for Deng. So 42 points at 6,600 makes him maybe a little bit of a fade to me in case people jump on and expect two in a row from Deng. I don't think we're going to see much use out of Amari Stoudemire. At center, if you're looking to save cash at center, Cody Zeller is really the only option you can get for under 5,000 across the whole night. He wasn't good in game one. 19 points at 4,500. It's not terrible, but he only played 20 minutes. I imagine he goes 25 to 27 minutes, hopefully, and can put up those 25 to 26 points. And at 4,500, that should return value. So if you're looking for cheap at center, he's the guy. Hassan Whiteside at 8,700, a really nice game in the first one without really being dominant, only played 26 minutes. There are a couple of really good high-priced centers available, him being one and DeAndre Jordan being the other one. I would take Jordan at 8,000 when we get to his game a little bit later, but Whiteside at 8,700, you're not really going wrong by picking him. Al Jefferson at 5,500. 19 points in game one. He'll be better than that, but I don't want to spend 55 on Al Jefferson. It just doesn't feel like there's enough upside in that sort of pick. The next one is the Detroit Pistons and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are favored by 10. The total is 201 points. The Pistons gave the Cavs a little bit of a scare in the first game before the Cavs overran them in the fourth quarter. What will they do in this one? I reckon we're looking at the point guards here, and I talked about the shooting guards. You want to go cheap. I reckon going more expensive on the point guards is the way to go. So I love Kyrie at 7,700. He had 51 in game one. He feels like a lock for 40. And opposite him, Reg Jackson at 6,600. He takes on Kyrie's poorest defense. 6,600 is not a big amount. He had 29 in game one. He's averaging 38 across his last three. You could easily pair these two together. Hopefully get a bit of a back and forth happening between them. And I think you're going to have a pretty good night. They're two guys who I really like at point guard. The other guy, Steve Blake, Matt Dellavedova. Not really sure there's much to really enjoy about either of those guys unless you can predict some sort of injury striking either of these starters down. Shooting guards, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's at 5,400. He had 28 in game one. He's 5,400's not that expensive. You only need 24 points out of him, 26 points maybe, to really be an impact guy. And I think that he can have a decent performance here. I do like him if you're looking for that. Again, one of those cheaper shooting guards. J.R. Smith dropped 21 in game one. He's at 4,600, one of the best tournament plays out there. The minutes were there for him. He played 35 in game one. 4,600 is not expensive. Definitely liked getting J.R. Smith involved. Shumpert, no thanks. And Jody Meeks didn't play in game one, and that will likely be the case throughout the rest of the season. Small forwards, LeBron, 10,500. He had 53 in game one. He has, we know he's a first round animal in playoffs. He plays well against the Pistons. I think that you can definitely, if there's one guy you want to spend up for, it's going to be LeBron. 10,500, I do really like. 50 points should be coming his way. Marcus Morris at 5,900. He had 31 in game one. He played 40 minutes, but I don't really think the minutes are going to change all that much unless the game is a massive blowout. 5,900 for Morris. I reckon he's a pretty good option to pair next to LeBron. And Stan Johnson had a pretty solid game. He was a minimum salary guy. He dropped 19 off the bench. They used him in situations where maybe we weren't expecting him to be used. At minimum salary, if you're looking, again, some of these lineups, you're going to have to punt a minimum salary guy. Maybe Johnson's one of those guys, and in a pairing with LeBron, I'd much rather take Stan Johnson than, say, Reggie Bullock or Richard Jefferson, who are also at minimum salary at that position. Power forwards, Kevin Love at 7,300. He had 45 in game one. Even if he just gets to 35, I reckon that's probably going to be enough to get it done. The Pistons have been allowing above average points for power forwards. He kicked it up a notch. He's averaging 40 over the last three against the Pistons. Love using love here. Pun unintended. Tristan Thompson at 4,800. A struggle game from him in the last one. Only 12 points. 4,800, though, is not an excessive salary. So if I'm looking to save money, I think that Thompson can have a pretty decent game as the starting center, grabbing some rebounds. But the matchup is not the best for him and going up against Drummond. So that's a little bit of a concern and might will make me steer clear of him in cash, definitely. Toby Harris at 6,600. Played a lot of minutes. Nothing really worked for him. 6,600 feels a little bit expensive. I would rather take a Marcus Morris at 5,900 than Toby Harris at that extra $700. We didn't see Channing Frye or Anthony Tolliver in game one, and that probably won't change here. At center, Andre Drummond is down to 7,800. He only had 28 points in the first game. He's only averaging 31 across his last five, but at some point, we're going to get a big Andre Drummond game. Is it this one, or is it when it's back in Detroit? It remains to be seen, but a Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond stack in a GPP is going to go off at one point, and that makes it a really good GPP pairing. So I can understand using Drummond, but if I'm looking for cash, then it's guys like Whiteside or Jordan who I prefer at the center position. Now, Tim Mozgov played 4 minutes. He had 2 points. Cool. And Aaron Baines is basically just there at the whim. Is that the right word? I don't think so. Doesn't sound right. His playing time is based upon what Drummond does. That's better. The Portland Trailblazers and the Los Angeles Clippers is the next game. Let's look at the point. Actually, let's look at the spread. The Clippers are favored by 8.5, and the total is 209. Point guard, Dame Lillard's at 84. He had 33 points in the first game. Chrissy Paul is at 9,800, a much better matchup for Paul. He had 54 in game one in just 33 minutes. I am definitely taking Paul over Lillard here. I think that if you're spending up as well, Paul is one of the better guys to go for. If you say if you don't take LeBron at small forward, Chris Paul is the other guy you want to anchor your lineup. Now, Lillard, I think, will be a little bit better, but it's still a really shit matchup for him going up against Paul and switching Redick onto him as well at times. Not a good spot for Lillard. Austin Rivers at 3,500. He can produce. Now, he had 16 points in game one in just 18 minutes. As bad as he might be in real life, he can put up fantasy numbers. And if you're looking to throw a, hey, why not, guy that can get 24 points in 30 at 3,500 that gets you 6 or 7x value, then Rivers might be a guy, well, he's definitely the best point guard to come in at a minimum salary. So he's worth looking at there. Bri Roberts and Pablo Prigioni, I don't really think they're going to be factors. At shooting guard, another one of these low-priced guys that I think you want to get in. JJ Redick's only 4,500. Now, he only had 21 in game one, but he only played 27 minutes. We know that he can go for 30, 35 points. And at 4,500, he really only needs to pass 26 points to be a real valuable player. So I do like him there. Gerald Henderson had a massive game in game one. He's at 3,700. The matchup is terrible for him. But look, it didn't really faze him in game one. He's a little bit risky to use, but he's not a bad tournament punt. Crawford, my man, Jamal, 4,200 for Jamal Crawford. He had 16 points in game one. There are better options out there than Jamal, I think. And CJ McCollum at 71 got absolutely swarmed in game one. The matchup looked horrible from the outset. It turned out that way. He is averaging less than 30 across his last five. I don't think you want to spend up at shooting guard. Alan Crabb, hey, he's cheap, but he's also not good. The small forwards, Al-Farouq Aminu at 5,500, had 29 in game one. I think I don't mind him at 5,500. I think he is a nice small forward option out there. Mo Harkless really struggled. He had only 18 points. At 5,300, though, I don't know if many people will be back on Mo Harkless, but he got his ass kicked by Blake Griffin, and that is a real concern. So that makes me a little bit cautious about using him. Jeff Green put up a grand total of 3 points in game one in a blowout. He's at 3,500. He can be ignored. So can Paul Pierce. So can Mar Mute. Those three players combined for 13 points in game one. Throw in Wes Johnson, and you got 9, and we went 4 players. The small forward quartet combined for just over 20 points. Needless to say, it's a brave man to use any of those 4 guys in DFS. Power forwards, I love it here. I like Blake at 9,300. He looked great in game one. He dropped 44 points. He's now averaging 39 across his last three in just 29 minutes. Full steam ahead for Blake Griffin. The matchup's there. This could be another massive one from him. I don't mind Eddie Davis at 3,900. He only had 17 in game one, but he is averaging 25 the last three times that the Blazers have taken on the Clippers, and he can easily get you a 20-22 sort of performance. He's more of a cash game guy rather than a tournament player with huge upside, but you can get 22 out of him in a cash game at 3,900. It really allows you to spend up in some other areas, maybe get Griffin in, maybe get Paul in, maybe get Kyrie in. Noah Vonleh, yeah, he played 7 minutes, but I don't know if that's because it was a blowout or not. He's really, really, really struggling. At centre, DeAndre Jordan at 8,000, 43 in game one. I think 40 should be an absolute minimum for him. Absolutely love getting him in. And Mason Plumlee was terrible in game one, really struggled with lots of things. Foul trouble, shooting, couldn't do anything, had 10 points in 19 minutes. Not many people are going to be back on Mason Plumlee. So if you're wanting to save some cash, and I really don't really recommend it at centre, I'll be going big. But Plumlee at 5,300 is a guy that easily got 30-point upside. Easily. Cole Aldrich, 3,500. As much as I love him, I think it's going to be tough for him to really return big value at 3,500. As we always say, it's going to take a DeAndre Jordan absence for him to really blow up. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day for today. As you remember, I didn't do them yesterday because there was only two games. I thought it was pointless me doing it because it would have been lots of me saying, I don't like anyone here. I don't like anyone here. And it was easy for me just to go through the games. Today, a little bit different. At point guard, Austin Rivers, 3,500. Reg Jackson, 6,600. And Kyrie at 7,700. For the shooting guards, JJ Redick, 46. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 54. And there's no shooting guard on the slate who was priced over 7,500. Small forwards, Joe Johnson, 49. Marcus Morris, 59. And LeBron James, 10,500. At the power forward position, Ed Davis at 3,900. Kevin Love at 7,300. And Blake Griffin at 9,300. And the centers, Cody Zeller, 45. Mason Plumlee, 53. And DeAndre Jordan, 8,000. We are done today, guys. Thank you for tuning in again. Let me know your thoughts on Jamal Crawford, if I was way off base with that sort of stuff, on the Kings coaches, any of your thoughts there. You can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Any questions about DFS lineups, hit me up there as well. And of course, follow Basketball Monster at Bask Monster, and you can sign up for our DFS package, which is just $14.95 for all the up-to-the-minute projections that we do over on Basketball Monster. Give yourselves, if you've got yourself a couple of spare minutes, leave a review on iTunes. It is tremendous. I'll be eternally grateful for any help that you can give the podcast. So thank you to those who have done that. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.